Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 12th of April, Anno Domini 2014, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. But before we do that, let me thank each and every one of you. We reached our goal. We made the money we needed to stay on the air. We will be off the air, I believe, on the 15th for a few hours for repair. But two things, we can now afford those repairs. And in addition, we will come back when those repairs are done. So this, we want to thank all of you for your generosity, your support, and for having faith in this station and in particular for this show.
The internet stream will still be running, but the broadcast antenna is losing power.
Right, right, right. And once again, I am trying, at least, to see if I've got the right cable for the hangout. I'm sure you folks will tell me if I have the wrong ones or whatever once I get there. I went to our good friends at Goldcrest, and I think I've got the right cable. The problem is this is a four-wire going in, but a three-wire coming out, and I think this should work. We'll find out, I suppose, at the next break. But I'll start with the news. Microsoft support for two major products ended on Tuesday, Windows XP and Office 2003. As a result, the company will no longer release security updates for either of the two, and it recommends users who still use either to get a new version. If you're wondering why April 8th, 2014 was the date for support of both of these products to end, it's really very simple. Microsoft releases regular patches on Patch Tuesday, the second Tuesday of every month. Microsoft supports its products for many years. Depending on when service packs as well as successors are released, the company eventually announces in advance when it will cut off support. April 8th happens to be the last Patch Tuesday for both products, meaning if security holes are found from now on, they will not be plugged. Windows XP was released on October 25th of 2001. It received three major updates, Service Pack 1 in 2002, Service Pack 2 in 2004, and Service Pack 3 in 2008. On April 14th of 2009, Microsoft retired mainstream support for XP, meaning security updates were still available, but free technical support, warranty claims, and design changes stopped being offered. The company last Tuesday, retired extended support for the operating system. There is one small piece of the puzzle left. Microsoft has said it will continue to update its security products for XP until next July, which means that the software that you use, if you use Microsoft's own software, it will continue to work until next July 14th. But they regularly warn users the operating system itself is no longer secure. Many Microsoft products have a support lifecycle of only 10 years, so XP is actually unique in that it was supported for more than 12 years. This was done as a result of XP's massive user base. The latest numbers show it's still over 27% of the market. If you're still using XP, no more security updates for your machines mean you should upgrade to a newer version, be it Windows Vista, which you shouldn't do, Windows 7, or Windows 8. You can also get a new Windows computer altogether, which should be running the latest Windows 8.1 release. Alternatively, you can choose to use a different operating system, such as one of the many Linux variants, or even purchase a new computer running OS 10 or Chrome OS. And our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like to remind you, is Windows XP and Office 2003 reach end of life? And your choices are no. Well, that's awkward.
You'll have to pry it out of my cold, dead computer. I'm still on Mac OS 5, so... Or just run Linux. And so far, we've got 33 votes. And not surprising for this crowd, 45% of you are saying just run Linux. And I know you'll have a lot more to say, so check out the far right column. Go down there to Fascinating Stuff. The top link is forums. And under forums, you will see the second forum set is the poll discussion. And under the poll discussion, the first choice is 12 April 14, Windows XP and Office 2003 reach end of life. And you can say we've already had a half a dozen people put in posts there. And you can join us, of course, on the phone at 966-5299 or 800-790-0415.
The number of calls that I've gotten this week about from folks asking me, well, I want to upgrade my machine to Windows 7. And I ask them, well, how old is it? And they go, 5-6 years old. I go, 10-1 odds, it ain't going to happen.
It's probably too late by now.
Windows 7, minimum, you want to run it with 4 gig of memory. The more, the better. And that old hardware, I'm sorry to say.
And you don't want a Celeron processor right. if you can help it.
Doesn't it really want a dual-core processor? Really,
yes, at least really a dual-core processor. Independent graphics card, so it has its own dedicated graphics, not shared graphics, because that'll always slow it down more. And a lot of folks are using these Dell boxes with the built-on motherboard, you know, graphics. And only 2 gig of memory. It's not going to hold
less,
it.
Yeah.
So they have to, you know, I tell them, well, you got to consider very soon getting into a different box. You've got to go for a different box. Well, I thought I'd be able to upgrade it. I don't do that much with it. Then I tell them, well, look into a Chromebook.
Exactly. Yeah.
A Chromebook for $200-$300, if you're just going to do simple surfing and everything else, you're good.
But watch when that simple surfing doesn't include Flash animation pages. Because Chrome doesn't do Flash, right?
Yeah, it does.
The Chrome OS has Flash?
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah. I was playing a Flash game the other day just to prove it could work.
Just to prove, cool. So Flash is a big problem with some of the smaller machines.
Right.
But we had the same sort of thing in our shop. We had 5 or 6 people come in and buy new computers. One guy was able to put Windows 7 on his laptop. It was only 4 years old.
Oh, not bad.
But we've had a lot of people come in with, you know, 8, 9, 10, 12-year-old XP boxes running half a gig of RAM and want to convert. And it's a very hard thing for the customer.
It's not going
to
do it.
Yeah, it's you got 10 years out of it. You know, move on. But you got to say that politely.
Well, that's the thing. Well, couldn't you make it do? Yeah, but then you're going to be very unhappy. And I'd rather see you put the money towards a new box than invest in band-aiding this box.
If you absolutely want to keep your own old box, you can put the Chromium OS on it, which is the free version of the Chrome OS. Which does all the same things, but mm-hmm. is free.
Yeah.
But free also means you're not going to get a lot of support or service or whatever. It's doable, and maybe, you know, there's somebody in town who does it. Certainly check out the Lugor, the Linux Users Group of Rochester.
Might be able to help you.
And Dave could help you as well. And, mm-hmm. and once you install that, it essentially becomes a Chromebook.
Yeah.
Although half a gig of RAM is still not really enough, you still want 2 gigs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, how many times has Microsoft tried to kill XP? So I found an article from April 2011. Microsoft has finally killed XP.
That's like I said in the thing, that's when they officially.
Well, they kept extending it.
Well, Vista came out.
Yeah, everyone
after
skipped
XP,
Vista,
and there was nobody wanted that. That was a piece of junk as bad as Windows.
Some of the comments I'm seeing on articles are just ridiculous. You know, people are just absolutely outraged that a company would discontinue support for a 14-year-old product.
Yeah.
Well, I'll never buy Microsoft again.
And from what I understand,
good, but,
and I haven't played with it yet, Windows 8.1, supposedly you have the choice to go with the old interface or the new.
Well, the new, the Metro, because I was playing with it at our cider meeting, virtualizing Windows 8 on my Mac. The Metro interface, well, the modern interface, is the default, but you can get to the desktop. But that the start menu is still not
right. There are
what
programs that will put back the start menu. Windows 9 is supposed to put back the start menu.
Yeah.
There's also a program you can download from Microsoft that will run under Windows 8.1 and give you an XP mode.
Wasn't that always part of the Ultimate package?
Yes, but now it's available. It's available to everybody. It's very, very weird. But all right, to the phones. Our first caller is Andy from Greece, New York. Hi, Andy. What's up?
Oh, good afternoon, gentlemen. You said I should check back in with you when I got my new computer bill. So that's part of today's call. The thing went together perfectly once I got the right motherboard. I don't know how I managed, but I got a motherboard with the wrong socket set up, so I had to buy a second motherboard. But fortunately, that was only an $80 mistake. And once I got that, everything plugged in perfectly, boots up perfectly, software all loaded. We're running 7 Pro. From time I hit the on button to the time I've got a full working Windows screen, it's just under 30 seconds.
Nice.
It's great.
Good now for you.
And it's hooked up to my network. It sees my printer. It sees my book, which is out on the USB port for the router. Been able to move data around. Thing works nice. Got all the data off the
SD
box onto the new box. Smooth. Now we get to the problem.
Yeah, there we go.
There I say. And now the butt.
And now we get to the problem, child. My wife wanted a laptop. So we bought her a laptop. Nice HP Envy. Fourth generation processor. 12 gigs of RAM. Terabyte hard drive, 17-inch screen, touch screen, 8.1.
Yep.
Won't see the network. It'll see the printer. I can double-click the printer, and it goes right to the Samsung software, which is a Samsung laser printer. I can print a test page, does fine. When I look at the when I go to the screen, it tells me printer's offline. I can't print anything. I can't get it to do that. It won't even see the MyBook. It won't see the network.
So you can't get on the internet, or you can't get on your local network?
I have full internet access.
But you can't see your local network.
The wireless network just fine. I've checked the wireless settings. I'm not restricting access.
I'm sorry. Until you answer my question, I can't go on.
Okay.
You're saying you can see the internet just fine, but you cannot see your local network?
Yes.
Okay.
Is it the network name issue?
It's probably the network name.
Yeah, the group name.
Right, the group name, the work group name. When you set up Windows, there's really two separate sections. There's the Ethernet, Internet, TCP/IP section, which gets you onto the Internet. Then there's the local networking segment that gets you onto your intranet, right. And Microsoft originally set up the networks with the name Work Group
was the original.
Right. But then they changed it, and the new name is...
Well, it was XP Home.
XP Home. Well, then, but then,
no, it was Work Group, and then it went to MS Home.
MS Home, that's right.
That was it. So what's... And the problem is, unless all the machines on the network have the same network name, they won't talk to each other because they assume they're on different networks.
So
you need to go in and...
Under the systems, I believe it is.
Under the network settings.
Yeah.
And excuse me, look for now. There's a section that tells you what your computer name is, and under it, it also tells you the network.
To change the work
under name. Under this, if you go under the system,
I'm finding a link on my
Under systems, it'll tell you what operating system you're running and what work group you're part of.
It needs to be the same on each computer.
All right,
computer.
Now you got to check with the other machine that you built to see what the name of that group is.
I know what it is.
You got to go in and edit it and change it so they're both the same. Because as long as they're different names, they think they're two different intranet groups. Like I could have an office, you know, and say accounting versus, say, CAD division. Even though we can get out to the intranet, you know, the internet, the intranet is different because they're two different work groups.
I follow what you say. Just where in this wonderful...
Which on the Chromebook?
8.1.
I just found the link, and I'm posting it.
Steve is posting it to our website even as we speak. So you'll be able to go and actually read the entire link as it stands.
And there's a difference between a work group and a home group, depending on... And a difference between a domain group.
The other question is, I'm extremely tempted to say, okay, go out and buy a 7 Pro 64-bit package wipe the hard drive and put it in.
That may not work because then you need drivers for the Ethernet and the sound and the video.
Yeah.
I went to HP's website and where'd my notebook?
Yeah, sometimes the companies don't make drivers for older OSs that don't come preloaded.
According to the HP's tech support, yes, they do. They have something called an HP NV full feature software and drivers package. It lists everything from XP and up through 8.1 Pro.
All right, but Andy, here's the thing, though. You got this nice laptop, and it's got a touch screen.
Yeah.
The touch screen is going to be handy with Windows 8.
Yeah.
You can use it. So before going and spending the extra bucks, let her, you know, try changing it. Go to the link Steve put up there. Change the work groups, put it back, and let her test drive it for a little bit.
Now, is the printer you're trying to get to, is it shared by a computer, or is it a straight network printer?
Up to one of the gigabit ports on the router.
So you should be able to set it up as an LPR with the IP address and not worry about networking.
It is set up. It has its own IP. I've reserved the IP so when we lose power, it doesn't change. I can get to it from the two old XP boxes and the new 7 box.
I
can see it on the 8.1 box. It's just not talking to it. And I think the workgroup thing is going to do it.
Yeah, well, One
quick thing here. When I went up to the HP site and looked for the software and drivers package, you're going to love this. The name of the package is LSD410. So we have hallucinatory driver packages.
Yeah. Nice. Very nice. Listen, we got to take a break.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Andy. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 22 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Right here on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 27 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And I once again want to thank everybody who helped us reach our goal. The station stays on the air. We stay on the station. Everybody wins. And let me talk a little bit. Oh, this is great. Sony said on Friday there was a risk that batteries made by Panasonic in nearly 26,000 of Sony's newest VAIO personal computers could overheat and catch fire. The latest product glitch for the Japanese electronics and entertainment giant. As a result, Sony is asking customers to stop using its VAIO Fit 11A laptop as soon as possible.
Oh, that's reassuring.
Stop using your Sony Fit 11A laptop as soon as possible. Sony said it had received 3 reports of batteries overheating, causing partial burns to VAIO computers. The first incident was in Japan on March 19th, followed by similar incidents in March 30th in Hong Kong and in April 8th in China. The company stopped selling the product at the beginning of this month. The model is the final version of the VAIO series, but ain't that the truth? Sony unveiled plans in February to sell its personal computer business as part of a strategy to deal with its 2 troubled electronics units, television and personal computers. The company will also split off its money-losing TV division into a separate subsidiary. In announcing the sale of its personal computer business to Turnaround Fund Japan Industrial Partners, Inc. in February, Sony chief executive Kazuo Hirai called the decision agonizing. Sony said in a statement on Friday it was identifying the affected computers by serial number and developing a program to repair or replace them. It said the company would provide details on its homepage within 2 weeks. So if you have a Sony VAIO Fit 11A laptop, stop using it and check their website in 2 weeks on another computer. The company said it had a total of 25,905 units of the VAIO Fit 11A worldwide since it first went on sale in February. Of these, nearly 7,000 were sold. It doesn't matter where they were sold. A Panasonic spokes individual confirmed the company had provided the batteries to Sony under an outsourcing contract. She declined to say which other computer manufacturers had received Panasonic batteries, as such information is confidential. However, she said the batteries are customized according to client's requirements and differ depending on the client. She said Panasonic hadn't heard of any problems with battery supplied to other clients. In 2010, Sony said it was recalling about 535,000 VAIO laptops worldwide due to a temperature control defect that may cause excessive heat and distort the shape of the laptop.
That's a separate recall, by the way. So do you have a Sony laptop? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Is that not the most amazing thing?
We're starting to see that, because I've seen that in some Apple batteries, too, that come from Sony. So maybe they've been farmed out to Panasonic. But it seems to be an issue with these new lithium-ion high-capacity batteries.
This is nothing new, though.
Right. Well, the new thing is that they swell, and that's been going on for a few years now. They'll swell at the end of their life or when there's a malfunction in the battery.
Mm-hmm.
We had a couple of them in the last couple of weeks that swole. Usually when it swells, it pushes under the trackpad because that's where the battery is on most laptops, and your clicking stops working. But sometimes we've had them that swell enough to pop the screws off the bottom and actually push the bottom case off the computer. In one case, it was a 5-year-old battery, and Apple said, it's out of warranty, buy a new one. And the customer says, what if it burned my house down?
Right.
It's out of warranty, buy a new one. So yeah. We said, if it did that, you'd have an action against Apple,
right.
Probably. But yeah, so it's, and you've seen a couple of them, Dave, in your shop. Sometimes they're fast. This one customer said, within an hour, they went up to dinner, and the computer was fine. When they went back down to the computer after dinner, the whole bottom had popped off because the battery had swollen about an inch and a half.
Well, I had a guy go out shopping.
Yeah.
Left his wife, you know, the computers come into his house, and the way he described it, is to the left of the house was the computer room. To the right was their bedroom and all that. He goes out shopping, comes back. There's a... opens up the door, smells the smoke. He looked down the room of the computer, where the computer was. The desk is on fire.
Wow.
Now he's got the predicament that he's got to either tend to that or get his wife out of the house because she's on pure oxygen.
Okie dokie then.
Needless to say, he quick got her out.
Yeah.
And neighbors quick came over and they called the fire department, but... that den was trashed.
Oh, yeah, sure it would be.
And the whole desk, everything. That's the one that I had on my, our webpage.
Right.
Where I was able to pull the hard drive out of it, believe it or not. And this was charred in there good. Got it out, pulled the hard drive out, got it to spin up, and got all his data off of it.
Nice.
Yep. And what we're seeing over time is that batteries have gotten smaller and cheaper, but they still last longer. You remember the early days of batteries, they were lead acid batteries and they lasted for an hour. But we're making our computers want to do more and more things. So these smaller, cheaper batteries have a much higher energy density.
Right.
And it's, in essence, it's a little bomb in there waiting to go off. And there's all sorts of research on new types of batteries. The lithium-ion battery has been fairly common the last few years. There's a new lithium polymer battery coming. They're talking about supercapacitors, possibly. But everyone is trying to work on this battery technology, and it translates into electric cars, too. Didn't say the Tesla has got like 300 laptop batteries as its power source.
Yep.
And so that energy density is a huge thing. We want our computers to do more and more and more. We want the battery to last days, and it's got to come from somewhere.
Well,
take
laptop,
chemistry classes in college.
Well, yeah. Exactly. This laptop lasts, the battery lasts about, I have a Chromebook, the battery lasts about 10 hours. My phone, it lasts for a day. Dave's phone, it probably lasts for 2 days. Part of that is better battery technology. Part of that is larger batteries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And on a lot of the Chromebooks and a lot of the MacBooks now, and PCs even, the solid state drives, there's no mechanical spinning hard drive, so that doesn't take as much power.
Right.
Right. But even so, these things, and Steve is right, they're essentially... little balls of little bundles of high density energy, and if something disturbs them, that energy can be released quickly. We call that an explosion.
Yeah,
and that's a problem. So you want to be aware at least.
Yeah. You want that real high energy density so it lasts a long time, but you want it to be released slowly.
Yeah, right.
One of the other things though that I've been seeing too though is capacitors.
Yeah.
Popping. And what happens there, they're designed to pop, folks, because there's usually a little K or
an X.
An X.
The X one's popped real bad.
Yeah, and what happens is these capacitors will go bad, and they're designed to do this, and they'll pop up, and it cracks, and all this fluid in that seeps out, and then it seeps down onto the board, and that usually fries the machine. I had that take out a touchpad, or not a touchpad, a wireless board on a laptop.
But it does that instead of exploding.
Exactly.
So that's why batteries are swelling. It's the gases from the chemical reaction.
Right.
And if they vent, then it's poisonous.
Right.
Or if they explode, there's a fire. So take your pick,
I guess.
Yeah,
really.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Rich from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Rich. What's up?
Hi, guys. Talk about overheating issues. Let me lower this. Last night, I had my router on top of my modem, and for the past 2 weeks, I've been trying to connect to the internet. It had worked good previous to that, but after 4 hours yesterday and still no luck, both of them were red hot.
Yep.
And I'm not so sure whether it was the modem, which is probably 8 years old, or the router, which is 3 years old, that was the cause of the overheating. But apparently, whatever is wrong with them is causing me to not get back onto my internet. I'm ready to go out and buy a new computer. And maybe a combination. By the way, what do you guys think of combination router and modem built into one?
Well, almost all of them are combinations. Whether you use that combination is a separate story.
And the earlier question is, are you renting your cable router or DSL router from the ISP?
Because yes, I am.
Yeah, because some people will buy their own router, so you have that internet router and the wireless LAN router in one box, and a lot of people like that because then you don't have to pay the rent.
Yeah.
But then if there's a problem, they don't fix it.
Well,
I understand that.
Yeah.
But here's the other issue. You said the router was on top of the modem. That's also very bad. They should be not on top of each other. Because now you've created the modem produces a certain amount of heat. The router produces a certain amount of heat. When you put them on top of each other, you're doubling the amount of heat.
Okay.
And
you want to make sure that it's well vented, keep the dust away from them.
Right. Dust is an amazing insulator. I noticed my router was running a little warm, and so I just dusted it. And about 45 minutes later, it was cool to the touch again. And it was just, it wasn't dusty to the point where I looked at it and said, oh, my God.
And a lot of people.
But it had a little dust on it.
A lot of those are just, they're on the floor behind the desk where the wire comes out of the wall and you don't even think of it.
Right. Uh-huh. And so at the same time, when I dusted that, I also dusted off the router, the modem. Yeah. And both of them are running cool. So I would suggest that first you set, it's the same thing with like your cable box or your DVR or whatever. You start putting things on top of those and they start to overheat.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So it's the same with your modem and your router.
Yeah, got it. I heard one of you guys just say that most of them are routers and modems built into one.
Yes.
If I went to Best Buy, most of them are, you said, because I was at a store yesterday and there were six or seven routers, but none of them said modem included in the electronics inside.
Well, it depends on how they define modem. That there's a cable router modem and a DSL router modem. That
right, I know the difference there,
right,
yeah.
They normally were provided free from the internet company as part of your subscription.
Okay.
So for a long time, they weren't included. Mm-hmm. Now that most of the companies are charging your rent for those, you can get brands that have that cable router in it and the LAN router and the wireless router all in one box.
But
it
also
sounds like it's a piece of cake to connect up as well.
Yeah, but I misled you, Rich. I wasn't saying that every router has modems in it. I was saying that just about every cable or DSL modem includes a router.
Sometimes it's
so
only
it's the
one
other way around.
Yeah, sometimes it's only one port.
Right.
Oh.
And so you need a second router for more ports.
Okay.
But the Motorola Surfboard is one of the most common brands that Time Warner here in Rochester allows. Not allows. That's the wrong word.
Provides.
Recommends.
Recommends. Thank you. As a third party, or purchase your own router box.
What is it?
You're breaking up. And we got to take a break.
The Motorola Surfboard.
Thank you. Yep. Thanks, guys.
Got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 40 minutes after the hour. Sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And we have Steve from Greece, New York, on the line. Welcome, Steve. What's up?
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. It's time to upgrade my hard drive. I've got a 100 gig SATA drive, and it's just too small, and I've actually had problems with it. I'm running a white box with Asus Rampage 3 Extreme motherboard. And an Intel i7-970 processor.
Okay.
And I'm looking to get a Samsung either 500 gig or 750 gig, and I don't know if they are compatible with my hard drive.
Well, the important part there is that it's SATA.
Right.
Okay, it's not it, if it connects to SATA, it will connect to your motherboard and it will work on your system.
There is SATA 3 and SATA 6 transfer speeds, but they that's just the speed of the connection, not the connection itself.
The two I'm looking at are both SATA 3 single unit version.
Yeah, so SATA is pretty much SATA. Pretty much any SATA drive will work with pretty much any SATA connection.
So there should be no problem taking out and all this. What is the best way to transfer my operating system and what's on there now to the new drive?
Well, there's two things that you can do with this. You can either make that transfer, and we'll talk about how you do that in a minute, or you could just add the drive as a second drive into the system, assuming there's room for both in the case. Then what you do is you go in and change the paths, for example, to your download files and your document files, move all the documents and downloads over to that new drive, and you've now got 700 gig worth of storage, plus that original 100 gig drive. Now we'll have plenty of room for whatever programs you want to put in. Plus, because they now run independently, they'll actually seem to run a little bit faster.
Okay. I've had problems with this drive. I actually had to take it to a computer place and I ended up having to format it. So I want to get it out as my operating system.
All right.
I don't want to use it.
There. All right. Then in that case, you do want to. You can transfer things over. Dave, what program would you generally use to transfer?
Well, Norton Ghost is the big commercial program to do that.
Yeah. Right.
I'm sure that there's.
Yeah, Ghost would be the one that I would.
But it's annoying. You have to buy this program for a one-time thing.
Well, or you bring it to a vendor and you ask them.
That's something we can do.
If someone knows an alternative of disk cloning or ghosting.
Yeah, but Ghost, though, does
the Kronos 2 image.
Clonezilla will do it. There's a bunch of them that'll do it, but the question is how well will they work and how facile will Steve be with them as opposed to paying a few bucks.
Right, Ghost, and Ghost does everything. It moves the whole operating system.
The other problem in Windows is the disk partition size.
Right.
If your new disk is bigger than the old disk, Windows won't know it.
Right.
And so the ghosting program handles the partitioning and disk management of it.
Exactly. So Ghost is really the one you want to use, and if you don't want to buy that yourself, and I can understand why you wouldn't, then bring it to a reputable dealer like Dave or Steve or somebody and have them... do it for you. They will charge you, but it's cheap at half the price.
A Ghost, is that expensive?
Yes.
Holy smokes.
Well, $100 probably.
Well, yeah, it's $100. I don't know how much.
I'm looking it up now.
Steve's looking it
up. They have a free trial.
Right.
But it probably only does the first 10 minutes.
But again, how facile are you going to be with it? Are you going to make a mistake? Are you going to screw things up? It's not just a matter of click, click, click. So
if I just want to buy the stupid program, you Norton website,
Norton
I clicked the button that said buy, and there's nothing on here about buying Ghost.
Yeah.
But the point here is, how easily are you going to be able to run that program, particularly since you're not learning to run it, you just want it for a one-time thing. It can't be more money to bring it to somebody and have them do it for you.
All right.
You know, at that point, it's penny wise and pound foolish. You spend $100 for the program, you spend $50 or $70 to have somebody do it. What's the difference?
Okay. A really quick question. I am not running Office. What I'm running is Office XP.
Yeah.
Every time I do updates, it wants to do some Office 7 updates. I have not been doing them because I'm running Office XP.
Right.
Should I be doing those?
Nope.
Why is it asking me to do them? I don't have Office 7.
Who? I have no idea.
You might have a piece of Office 7, right. like a .NET or something.
With the operating system. Yeah.
Okay.
The other thing is, you heard our first story, Office XP is also at end of life.
Yeah, I know, but it's well paid for.
Well, but my point is, it's now not going to be secure.
Right. Okay. Don't worry about that. I'm using it on a computer that actually doesn't use the net, so we're fine, I think, for now at least.
Well, right. Whatever makes you sleep at night.
I do. Okay, so basically hard drives will fit, and I need to either pay someone or spend a lot of money on Ghost.
Right.
I almost think Ghost has been discontinued because I don't see it for sale anywhere.
Really?
Of course. Well, Symantec buys it and then kills it.
Oh, yeah. They may have changed the name.
Ah.
They may be calling it something else.
But it still shows up in Norton Ghost 15 Professional Backup. They're calling it Backup Software now. If I hit buy now, then it takes me to the main Norton page where there's no thing about Norton Ghost.
I don't know. But, yeah, I would bring it to somebody to do the cloning for you.
All right. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Have a good afternoon.
You too, sir.
Have fun.
Get outside and get some weather.
Exactly.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye. And if you don't do it today, you really, really need to do it Monday when it's going to be up around 80. And then
there's a snowstorm coming, right?
Right.
Because it's Rochester.
Right, it's Rochester. Well, it's only spring. It's not summer yet.
Yeah.
When it gets up into 73 or even 4 days in a row.
Yep.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Welcome, Mark. What's up?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Peachy, how are you?
I'm well. I've got a question for you about a Chromebook.
Yeah.
I've got a sister who, if I even remotely put her on a laptop, would be calling me every hour.
Sure.
She uses a Kindle to access her email, and she likes to YouTube. Problem is that when she gets on YouTube, some videos are blocked. Like, if you want to watch them, say, if you have, like, a Blu-ray player that lets you go on YouTube, certain videos they won't let you watch on your TV.
Right.
Same thing on her Kindle. Would she run into the same problem on a Chromebook?
I honestly do not know. I have a Chromebook, but I've never done... Are you talking about on, like, Netflix or one of those?
No. She did... if she tries on her Blu-ray player, there's an app that runs for YouTube, and you can go in and search videos, and then when you go and look for the videos, some of them will have circle with a cross through, you know, across.
Oh, that's Flash. Okay. No, Flash works on the Chromebook, so that is not going to be an issue.
So, because sometimes you go to play those videos and they'll say it's been blocked by the uploader, can't be played on a television or can't be played
right,
on a tablet.
Because there's no Flash on that device.
Okay.
Generally, unless I'm misunderstanding you completely, that should work. Here's the other thing. You can test that on your own. If you have a laptop or a desktop which runs the Chrome browser, and you can download it and install it on any machine at all, and it'll live happily on the hard drive with other browsers.
I use Chrome.
You can go to that video and see if it plays on your machine. Because there are multiple reasons that videos will be blocked. Sometimes they're blocked because they violate somebody else's copyright. Sometimes they're blocked because they are violating some
country.
Norms of...
It's a British video, and you can't watch it in the U.S.
Right. And so there are a lot of reasons that things will be blocked. But if, in fact, they're being blocked because of Flash, and if you can play them on the Chrome browser on your desktop, then they will play on a Chromebook as well.
Okay, yeah, because these videos come up and say they're blocked by the user. It can't be played, say, on a TV. You know, if you have a network-connected TV that runs a YouTube app.
Right.
They won't play there. Same thing she's running to. The same videos that won't play on her TV won't play on her Kindle.
So try them on your computer, desktop, laptop, whatever, in the Chrome browser. If they run there, they will run on the Chromebook.
Yeah, because I think that's the ultimate solution for her because, you know, it just does limited stuff. She doesn't have to worry about, you know, anything. And that's less tech support for me.
Exactly. Exactly.
And how much do you think she should spend on one for what she wants to do, which is pretty much email, browse the web a little bit, and YouTube?
I would say a 2-gig machine would be fine for her. Any of the $200, $250, $300 ones, Toshiba makes a nice one with a 13-inch screen. It also depends on how good her eyes are.
Right.
I also have an HP that's 14 inches that has a brilliant screen. So both of those are very nice. They're both in the $300 range for the 2-gig model.
I'd say that'd be perfect because she's using a tablet now, and it's
a little
7
small.
Or 10-inch, so 14's got to be better.
Exactly.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Good luck. Let me know how she likes it. I have always been a fan of the Chrome browser. I really like my Chromebook. If you're one of those people who's interested in Chromebooks but don't know if you could use one, download the Chrome browser, install it on your machine, add all the updates, whatever, all the apps and things like that that are available for it. They all run on the about 99.9% of them run on the Chromebook as well, and see how much of your day you spend in the browser as opposed to not in the browser. I gave a talk
mail
for
and
the
web and exactly. documents and games,
all yeah. of that stuff.
Yep.
And I gave a talk yesterday at the Rochester Professional Consultants Network, and it was I had a lot of fun. I don't know if they did, but I certainly did. That's one of the things we talked about was getting a Chromebook. And if you've already got a high-end desktop that you do your high-end work on, like video editing, audio editing, et cetera, and you just want something to take around, take notes, surf the web, do everything else on, then a Chromebook is a good choice because it's less expensive, it's lighter, it's easier to use, whatever, whatever. And you end up with saving some money, having a device that'll carry around. Like I said, I get 10 hours out of this thing, and right now I have... the Soundbites main page open so I can look at the poll. I have the poll second window open with the poll discussion open in it. I have a third open to Google Hangouts. I have a fourth open to my Drive. I have a fifth tab open to the actual page where I'm keeping track of what we're talking about. And then on top of that, I also have the Hangout itself running in a separate window.
The video stream. What's your CPU at?
I can actually tell you some of that.
So that's a heck of a lot for a little tiny Chromebook.
It really is, and it's not even warm at this point. It's nothing. It's handling this without any trouble, and this is only a 2-gig machine, so it's not like there's a lot going on in it, and it is handling it just fine. So I'm pretty pleased. It's a pretty nice little box, and for the price, you know, if you're willing to live with what it can do, you know, you're there are some things you're just not going to run on it, and we all get that. So if you're willing to run to figure out what it will and won't do for you, then you'll be in pretty good shape. Listen, we're going to take a slightly longer break. But we will be back on the other side of that break for another whole hour of this nonsense. So don't go too far away.
It's America's longest.
This is 90.
Enright, Steve Ray. That was Dave Enright. Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco. And look at his face. He's like, where the heck did that come from?
We are Sound Bites right here on the truly great and truly member supported. He's actually outraged at what that board just did to him.
I was just hovering and all of a sudden. It's like it's got a mind of its own.
We'll be back in a couple of minutes. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And before we get along too much farther, we should probably talk a little bit about Heartbleed. A newly discovered security bug nicknamed Heartbleed has exposed millions of usernames, passwords, and reportedly credit card numbers, a major problem that hackers could have exploited during the more than 2 years it went undetected. It's unlike most of the breaches reported over the past few years in which one website or another got hacked or let its guard down. The flaw this time is in code designed to keep servers secure. Tens of thousands of servers on which data are stored for thousands of sites. That's why some experts were calling Heartbleed the worst bug yet, something that could worry everyone who frequents the internet or does business on it. It's as if someone went on vacation not knowing the lock on the front door was broken. Could someone walk in? Yes. Will they? Did they? Who knows? Codenomicon, the Finnish security firm that helped discover the bug, offers a chilling illustration of its danger. We have tested some of our own servers from attacker's perspective. We attacked ourselves from outside without leaving a trace. Without using any privileged information or credentials, we were able to steal from ourselves the secret keys used for our X.509 certificates, usernames and passwords, instant messages, emails, and business-critical documents and communication. While companies were scrambling to implement a fix this week, nobody seemed to know whether any damage had been done. The bug was found in a type of software called OpenSSL, which is used on servers to encrypt sensitive information to protect people's privacy. At least 500,000 servers were reportedly vulnerable. You should care about this because whether you realize it or not, a hell of a lot of the security infrastructure you rely on is dependent in some way on OpenSSL, said Matthew Green, a cryptographer and research professor at Johns Hopkins University. This includes many of the websites that store your personal information, and for better or for worse, industry's reliance on OpenSSL is only increasing. So, what should you do? Well, from the beginning, maybe you should wait a day or two to let every major website update, and at this point now, you should change your passwords. And of course, make sure that you use unique passwords on each website. One of the problems that we all have is that we tend to use the same password for multiple systems because it's easier to remember. But it's also very, very dangerous. Any one of those sites that gets compromised means they have your password for all of your sites. And while you may not think it matters if somebody gets your Facebook password or your Google Plus password or even your email password, all you have to do is suddenly discover on your website someone's posting child pornography or someone sending out Facebook stuff that's racist or sexist, and suddenly you're in a whole lot of trouble. And if you don't care about that, well, that's your business. But don't complain to me when you get caught. You should make different passwords for all your sites. And don't even pretend you're too stupid to figure out different passwords, because you're not, and I know you're not. So,
but you can use a password manager if you want to.
And you can use a password manager like LastPass or KeePass or any one of those.
Keychain built into the Mac.
Right. And so you can, there's 1,000 of them. So use those to keep track of your passwords and you should be fine.
The sort of interesting danger is you shouldn't change the password on a site until they fix their problem. Because if you change the password and their server is still vulnerable, your new password could be exploited.
Right. It's exactly right.
So I've posted a link from FileHippo. FIPPO. You can put in a URL for, say, your bank or, you know, other, you know, secure website you go to, and it will test that server to see if it's exploited or not, or exploitable or not.
Right. And once they say that it's not exploitable, then you should change the password on that site. So enter your bank password, enter your
Facebook or Apple or, you know, whoever it is you do stuff with. And
it's generally when you go to a secure website is a shopping site or a banking site where you're going to put in credit card information. So those are the ones that do this encryption. Although there's been a push recently to do encryption everywhere because you can. Nice. And so now all of those sites that had put HTTPS everywhere have to make sure that they fix the OpenSSL bug.
Right.
I also put up a link to a cute XKCD cartoon from this week on the bug. Of course, now I can't find it again.
And it explains it.
In human perfectly. Readable understanding, yeah.
Yeah, it really is. Randall Monroe, an amazing individual.
He's an asteroid named after him.
Of course he does. And he deserves it.
Yeah.
What the heck? But yeah, so you should make sure that you've changed your passwords and that they're all in separate places, or that they're all separate passwords. And while you're doing that, we are going to go back to the phones and talk to George. Not Gordo, George, in Greece, New York. Hi, George, what's up?
Good afternoon, fellas. I'm getting a dark shadow along an edge of the paper coming out of my laser printer. Is that a problem with the cartridge or with some other part of the printer?
Oftentimes, that is the developer. Some printers have toner and developer, sometimes called a drum, as two separate pieces, sometimes three separate pieces. Some printers have one piece for the toner, the developer, and the drum. If you can replace one of them, see if that works. Usually, when it's shadowing on the edge, it's the developer roller that isn't being cleaned off between prints, and so it's laying down extra fuser. I've got a printer at work that's doing that, and we're waiting till it gets bad enough to justify the cost of replacing it.
Right.
So if I understand, Steve, you're talking about replacing the printer, not the cartridge.
Well, no, the easiest thing is to replace the cartridge, whether it's a single cartridge for the toner and the drum, or if it's two cartridges. Usually you can replace just the drum. In fact, most printers will have a counter for the toner count and the drum count. If you look in the specs that came in the manual, it might tell you what the expected life of those are. Usually, what we see with laser printers, you can get 2,000-4,000 pages out of the toner. The drum often lasts about 10,000 pages, which is why some printers make that two separate parts. So you're not replacing the drum. You only have to replace the drum every three or four toner cartridges.
Right.
I see. So the drum is it okay if I give the name of the company here?
Sure.
It's an HP LaserJet 1020. I've had a lot of good service out of it, and I think it's a terrific device. And I've replaced the replaceable cartridge, I don't know, maybe four or five times.
So it might be time to replace the toner, to replace the drum.
That I think the 1020 uses a single.
Drum is, though. Is the drum
I think the 10,
what I call the cartridge.
Yeah, the 1020 I think is a single cartridge for the toner and the drum and the developer.
That's correct.
Which may just mean you got a bit. So if you replace the cartridge,
yeah,
you're replacing the developer, and you may be good. You may have just gotten a bad one.
I didn't want to open the new box in the event that the problem was in the other
That's
part
the
of the
problem.
Printer.
Yep. You can take a look at the feed rollers that are inside the printer. Sometimes they have excess toner dust on them, and that can then get transferred to the next piece of paper. Some printers have a cleaning page they can do, which you can usually make yourself. It's a diagonal line about an inch wide going from corner to corner of the paper. Okay. So it rolls across the entire width of all of the rollers. There's the pickup roller and the feed roller and the exit roller and everything that's inside. I took laser printers apart at a previous job. That's why... Putting them back together was fun, too. Everyone comes around with fire extinguishers and waits for us to flip the power switch on.
So when I look inside, I see little particles build up on the left and mostly on the left-hand side. Which
yeah.
Is
So sometimes you can take like a vacuum cleaner or can of air and blow that out. Sometimes a Q-tip with isopropyl alcohol can clean that roller.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure.
All right, thanks.
We're seeing the cost of things come down so much. You know, the first commercial laser printer was $50,000, And then they started dropping from there. Apple's first end-user laser printer was only $7, and that sort of revolutionized the desktop publishing market, where you could get a laser printer for your own small business. But nowadays, I think this HP 1020 printer was like $150.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. Inkjet printers are cheaper. You can get an inkjet printer for $50, but then you're going to pay for the ink. Significantly
which
more.
Which is like what, 5 times more expensive than gasoline?
Yeah, well, 1,000 times more expensive than gas. Those little tiny ink cartridges you get, they're usually measured in milliliters. So it's $10 for, say, 10 milliliters. A gallon is what, 4,000 milliliters?
Yeah, right.
But laser printers cost a little more to begin with, but their consumables are so much lower that they generally make a better value. So some people will get an inkjet printer because liquid ink still does the best for color photographs. And then a black and white printer for all your regular printing. And color printers are now starting at under $300 for color laser. And they do pretty good with photos. Not quite as good as liquid ink, but you pay more for that
right
in the long run.
Right. My wife does a lot of signs for market.
Yep.
They have a stand at the public market, and she won't use an inkjet printer for that because the colors can run even if you
because it's
even
liquid.
If you cover them, even if you know you put what is it, contact paper, clear contact.
Yeah, you have to use special inkjet paper so the ink doesn't bleed into the paper,
right?
And then a special coating on the top so it doesn't bleed off the paper,
right? But a color laser printer does just fine for that.
Yep.
And a color laser printer more expensive because you've got 4 cartridges, but even so, cheaper in the long run for the consumables than the color inkjet printer.
Yeah. It used to be that color laser printers, the 4 cartridges were on a rotating carousel, and the paper would go into the printer and the carousel would rotate and lay down each of the 4 colors. And so you were looking at like 4 pages a minute for your print speed, if you were lucky. Then someone got the bright idea to make the toner cartridges stationary and move the paper back and forth. And now we can get 15, 20 pages a minute out of a $300 printer.
Right, right, right. And so they're pretty nice. But again, you know, a laser printer is more of an initial cost, and it's penny-wise, pound-foolish. It's more of an initial cost, but in the long run, you're actually saving money. So if you do a lot of printing over the next 10 years, you're actually going to save a bucket load of cash. So it's a pretty good deal that way. I know a lot of people buy the and what's interesting, it's often cheaper to buy the printer.
Yeah.
The inkjet printers, it's often cheaper to buy the printer than it is to replace the inkjet cartridges.
A lot of computer companies have deals where you buy a new computer, you get a printer for free or for a discount, and so when you buy that $299 piece of crap computer and get the free printer, when the computer breaks in a year, you buy another one and get another free printer.
Yeah, well, exactly. But in those cases, it's actually cheaper to replace the printer than it is to buy the cartridges. But of course, the initial cartridges that you get with an inkjet printer are very low. They're filled very low. So
starter cartridges.
They're not even filled as much as a regular.
Laser printers are sometimes like that too.
Yeah.
And most printers will have the standard capacity cartridges, ink and laser, and then there'll be a high capacity or high yield, and it's usually like double the price for the high yield, but it's 3 or 4 times the ink, and so that's a better value.
Right.
But it costs more. So people are always looking for cheap, even though the unit
every
unit pricing.
Everyone at his medical bills.
You got to shop for unit prices.
You having fun over there? All
no,
right, listen.
No comment.
We're going to take a quick break while Dave breaks out the brick
cat
to
full
fix
moon.
This thing. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 20 minutes after the hour. Sound bites on the truly great. And thank you for being truly member supported, Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Lynn from Clymer, New York on the line. Welcome, Lynn. What's up?
Well, in regard to an earlier caller who was talking about cloning a drive over.
Yeah, that was Steve.
Wonderful. to Steve, then, if he's still listening. The Western Digital and Seagate, I know them for sure. If you go to their website online, they have a copy of Acronis that will work only with their drive.
Yeah, I was going to mention that, that some drives come with cloning software because a natural use is to replace your smaller drive.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, that, and don't try to get cute and use Seagate's with Western Digital or vice versa, because I tried that once.
Right. What's the name of the software?
It's Acronis True Image. And Western Digital, Seagate, some of the hard drive companies bundle their own cloning, a version of it. Basically, a light version that only works with their brand.
Then four.
Yep.
Excellent. Thank you. That's a great tip. Thanks.
Yep. Have a good weekend.
Oh, we will. Have fun. So there you go, Steve. If you're buying a Western Digital or Seagate drive, you can download Acronis True Image. Now, I don't know that that does exactly what you want, but...
Sounds like it. By its name, it's a true image.
Yeah.
And that's only $50
to
buy.
But he doesn't want a true image. He wants an image that's bigger than the original.
That's, yeah, good point.
What? Are you still frustrated?
No. I got things back to where they belong.
Things are just randomly starting up all over the place.
Rob is in there remotely messing up with you.
That's exactly what he's doing.
If he was. Hold on a minute.
Yeah, he's got to run away.
Yeah, Dave's got to run away. But we're here, and it's a pretty interesting thing. Things like Acronis, they make them. You can buy Acronis, of course, itself, just yourself. But if you get the version that runs only with their drive, then you can use that instead. So yeah, here's an interesting thing, considering that Comcast is talking about buying Time Warner. Comcast appears to have a new trick up its sleeve. The cable operator is reportedly looking to create a mobile phone service that would mostly rely on Wi-Fi. The alleged service would use Wi-Fi from wireless routers and public hotspots in areas where those services are available. And in more rural zones, the service would lease spectra from common cellular carriers like Verizon, Sprint, and AT&T. While definitely a first for a major company, smaller carriers in the U.S., such as Republic Wireless, are already using this kind of service. Republic's low-cost plans start at $5 a month for the most basic service that includes unlimited talk, texting, and data service while in Wi-Fi hotspots only. Like Comcast's purported plan, Republic uses both Wi-Fi and cellular wireless technology to offer users its mobile service. When Wi-Fi is unavailable, it automatically switches to a cellular wireless network. It leases capacity from Sprint, which means wherever Sprint offers cellular services where users can access Republic's network. Republic has spent time ironing out some of the bumps in its service, such as the switching back and forth between Wi-Fi and cellular, finding the right devices to handle the services. These are all issues Comcast will have to deal with also. Last June, the company announced the launch of the new home-based neighborhood hotspot initiative in which subscribers to Comcast host Wi-Fi hotspots that other Comcast customers can use as part of their monthly broadband service. Comcast also announced it added more than 150,000 indoor and outdoor Wi-Fi hotspots in more than a dozen major cities across the U.S. The news of Comcast's purported mobile service comes as the company kicks off its regulatory review process for its $45.2 billion merger with Time Warner Cable. Comcast issued a filing Tuesday detailing the benefits of the merger and defending itself against claims that the deal would harm competition. How do you feel about getting your cell service from your cable provider? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415. I have friends in other cities who are not fans, who have Comcast as their provider.
Mm-hmm.
They are not fans.
Really?
Well, nobody likes their provider, no matter where they are.
Well, and that, I was about to say that. So, but you have to take that with a bit of a grain of salt. Nobody here likes Time Warner. Nobody there likes Comcast.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody somewhere else doesn't like Frontier. Nobody there doesn't like another. You know, that's a given. And you have to take a certain amount of that with a grain of salt. Everybody's got horror stories.
I'm sorry, but I still believe, and I know the technology's got to be out there, that instead of buying these bundles, like they call them, bundles, where you get certain program, you know, channels,
right,
for the bundle, that I be able to, say, get a 25-channel bundle, but I can go on the screen and select what 25 I want in my bundle.
Yeah.
Don't give me sports and some of these other QVC and all these other auction and whatever channels that I don't really want.
But here's the problem. If they don't bundle those together and give them to you that way, they can't afford. It costs them more.
That's why they, yeah, that's what they say. That, and no one would buy the shopping channels or the
yeah, who cares?
Know, home improvement. Oh, so it'd be too small a market. But we are seeing that type of thing, individual pricing in the non-traditional broadcast medium. The Apple TV, the Roku, Google Chrome, the new Amazon Fire. It comes with a bunch of channels on it, and you subscribe to the ones you want. So if you want to get right. HBO Go, then you can subscribe to it. Well, HBO is a bad example because you still have to have a cable TV subscription to HBO.
Right, but for
like ESPN.
Hulu and ESPN, yeah. And for all of those, you don't need that. In addition, when you've got a very high-speed connection, like we'll get with Greenlight when that comes around, you can get these things much faster without delays. I am finding that I'm paying for good service with Time Warner on their cable. I'm not talking about the internet service. On their cable, I get dropouts, I get stalls, I get sound dropouts as well. It's just it's annoying.
And one of their responses has been that it's a capacity issue. That they're multiplexing the channels.
Here's the problem
and they need to put fiber down.
They are accepting money from me to yep. provide a service at what I expect is an acceptable level.
Mm-hmm.
It's not my problem if they can't do that.
Correct.
They either have to stop charging for it or mm-hmm. fix it.
Yeah.
They want to charge
one or the other.
They want to charge extra so they can upgrade all their wiring.
That, again, not my problem.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. It just my soapbox for the moment. Sorry. I don't know.
Well, there's
the problem.
Well, we hear so much about other countries.
Yeah.
Getting so much more for so much less.
Yeah.
And it's like, wait a minute. Since when did we become a third world nation that we're getting a lot less and paying more?
Yep.
And being spoon-fed. Well, no, that's the way it's got to be.
Well, some of it's
the
100-year legacy.
You've just got to, you know, not be as greedy.
Right.
Instead of earning $1 billion, maybe earn $500 million.
Yeah. We see it a lot in other countries. They have much faster internet connectivity.
No caps.
They have no caps. They have no limits of any sort. Their cost is a lot lower. Now, what we will hear is that they purchased newer equipment. Okay. Exactly. I don't care. We're a third world nation when it comes to internet connectivity. And it's too bad.
Mm-hmm.
What it's going to take is for somebody to step up and say no more.
Yeah.
We will provide you X at Y, and that's the way it is.
And in some cities, that's been Google. Their Google TV
right.
package, a gigabit throughput, 120 channels for, what, $70 a month?
Yep.
That's, you know, a third of what I pay for a tenth the speed.
Yep.
No, a hundredth the speed. I only right. get 10 mm-hmm. megabit.
Yeah.
We're seeing it with Greenlight, 100 megabit or gigabit connectivity. What is it, $70 a month or 200? I don't remember. I don't want to say without knowing. That has no equivalent TV or phone service. But certainly with that kind of speed, with that kind of connectivity, you can add whatever the other stuff you want.
So, yeah, it seems to me that there's a disparity that we'll see fall out as time goes on, I think.
And the traditional TV networks are scared of this. But I've seen some of them are slowly moving. PBS and ABC both have iPad apps and Apple TV apps available on the Roku box, the Amazon box. So you don't have to have a cable TV subscription in many cases to be able to watch, say, an ABC TV show. But a lot of the channels, Fox is one of them, the Fox Online streaming, you have to have a partner cable TV subscription, and Rochester doesn't have that partnership. So some of the Fox shows I can't stream from the Fox website.
Right.
Because we have Time Warner, not Comcast, though.
Right.
So they made. But then the other problem there, Netflix made a deal with Comcast that's sending disturbing rufflings through the industry.
They've also said it was a mistake to make that deal.
Yeah.
By the way.
So Netflix is paying Comcast for Comcast to deliver Netflix content. So Netflix is paying their own internet provider to push the content out. Comcast came down and said, "We're receiving a lot of your content. We want you to pay us too." And Netflix said yes. Well, now AT&T is saying the same thing. And when is Time Warner?
I knew it was a mistake.
So and that's the whole thing about net neutrality is that you pay for your upstream bandwidth. You shouldn't have to pay for delivering your content to other people and other companies. So the net should be neutral, that whatever you want to put on it, anyone can watch it. It shouldn't be stopped somewhere. So the danger and the worry is, since we have, say, Time Warner Cable TV here, that you won't be able to watch a Netflix show because Netflix or NBC is a better example. You won't be able to watch an NBC show because that's owned by Comcast.
Right, right.
And Time Warner won't show it, or they'll delay it, or they'll cut the quality down because they're a competitor.
Right.
So they're
Which
a competitor
is why we
TV.
We need neutrality. Also, I misspoke. Greenlight's pricing is $100 for 100 megabits, right?
No, 50 a month for 100.
50 a month for 100 megabits. I don't even know what
I'm talking about. 250 for 1,000.
There we go. 50 bucks a month. That's ridiculously cheap. Okay. But we do we have time for the phone, or should we take a break first, or what do you want to do?
You got about a minute and a half if you want to get his question.
We can get his question.
Yeah.
We have Brian from Pavilion on the line. What's your question, Brian?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good. How are you?
Oh, fantastic. What a gorgeous day. I don't care for that merger news one bit.
Yeah, right.
That can only end badly for everybody except for Time Warner and Comcast.
Right.
That's for sure. Actually, there had been some discussion on your show past couple of weeks about Quicken and QuickBooks and corrupted files. And I've used both versions of those programs since the DOS days, and I've broken them and used them in every possible way. One thing that a lot of people don't realize with QuickBooks and Quicken, which kind of share basically the same kind of shell, is that it's very important that you not let Windows shut it off. Like at the end of the week, you know, you turn it off and let the machine shut everything down. Another real important thing is that when the QBW, the backbone file of Quicken and QuickBooks is open, that if you're using an offline service, those files are not being backed up in real time. They have to be closed before, like a Carbonite or any one of the clouds.
Or Dropbox, up.
And a lot of people don't realize that, and you'll end up, it's like unplugging a USB drive before, you know, ejecting it.
So you're saying you should not?
Oh, no, always close QuickBooks.
Well, that's what I meant.
Close QuickBooks manually.
Leave it open.
Oh, yeah, never leave it open.
And
yeah,
don't
use your backup function. A lot of people think that, well, I've got a cloud backup on this.
Yeah, the internal backup function, use that separately. Say, you put the live file on your hard drive, put the backup file on like Dropbox. And always close the program yourself. Don't let Windows close it. And when you do close it, don't shut the computer down immediately. You know, let it save its temp files and make sure everything's closed.
All right, guys. Have a good weekend.
Excellent. Thanks so much. Going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour. Sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1, turn your radio down. 2, turn your radio down lower. 3, remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4, Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enrich.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Ray from Henrietta, New York on the line. Welcome, Ray. What's up?
How you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm an XP user, or I should say former XP user.
Uh-huh.
I've heard a lot of good things about this Linux operating system. Two questions. Where do I get it? Is it free? You got to pay for it? And if I, when I do convert from XP to that, am I going to lose all my stuff?
Okay, two things. Linux is free. You can get, there are a dozen different flavors of Linux. One of the best ones is Ubuntu, U-B-U-N-T-U, at Ubuntu.com. And it's free. You download a CD and you burn it. Now, the problem with all of this is, are you going to lose all your stuff? Well, you are not going to be able to use the same programs you're using. So you won't be able to use Microsoft Office, but you can run LibreOffice, which is very, 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 very similar, and will read all your old files. So if you have a bunch of program, a bunch of files, a bunch of documents from Word or a bunch of spreadsheets from Excel, you'll be able to read them in LibreOffice Writer or LibreOffice Calc, for example. And same with the spreadsheets and whatever. The big thing, however, is that in order to put Linux onto your machine, you're going to reformat the hard drive.
Or use a second hard drive.
Or use a second hard drive. If you reformat the hard drive, you will lose everything on it that you have not backed up. So you have to make sure you do a good backup before you do an install of Linux to make sure that all of your documents, mail, whatever, are backed up before you move over.
Okay. All right, I didn't catch all that. So it's Libra, L-I-B-R-A?
L-I-B-R-E.
R-E.
Libra. It comes with it. That's it. You, it installs automatically.
Oh.
And that you can also run that under Mac or Windows. Instead of buying Microsoft Office.
Right. Okay. And again, it's free. One thing you should probably do before you go any farther is to look up the Lugor user group, L-U-G-O-R, the Linux Users Group of Rochester. And I believe they're at lugor.org.
Yep.
And L-U-G-O-R.org. And that, and go to one of their meetings, talk to their people. Maybe somebody will have a Linux laptop that they can show you what's going on with the product. And you can see some of the things that it's capable of doing before you actually go out and buy one. Or rather, before you redo your machine.
Gotcha. So it is free. That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, the OS is free, all the apps are free, but you don't get software support. You don't get a phone number to call.
You get online support. You can get support through the folks at Lugor. There, many of them are there to help you out.
Although calling Microsoft for support is a gamble anyway.
Yeah. I don't know that your support is any better there anyway. But
now, what about antivirus? I could use my same one I have.
Well, no, there's an antivirus called Clam AV.
Yeah, in general, you can't use any Windows software on Linux. You get all new Linux software, but it's all free.
And it's all equivalent.
All the same kinds of software are there as well.
Right. Oh. So I use Linux as my home machine. I have the full Office suite from LibreOffice. I have antivirus from Clam AV, which is also free and beg your pardon, and I download it. So pretty much anything you want, there is a Linux equivalent. And in fact, there's a website which I believe is called alternative.to.
Yeah. And that will let you type in a program like Photoshop, and it will give you an alternative, which in this case would be GIMP, a free Linux program for image manipulation. And in fact, many of these free Linux programs have crossed over into Mac, especially Mac, because it's also based on Unix.
Right.
And sometimes even Windows.
So one of the things that you'll want to do before you jump is to go to a place like Alternative 2 and type in Microsoft Office and see what is available there. Go to, and type in antivirus and see what's available there. Go to the Ubuntu.com website, and somewhere on that site they have a list of available software. And you can see just what kind of software you get with it. And you can see that there's an amazing amount of stuff. Now, it's going to be a little different. It's going to look a little different. It's going to work a little different. But let's face it, you're not stupid. You learned how to use Windows.
A new version of Windows would look different and feel different too.
Exactly. If you're going, you can go to 8.1 and relearn everything. You can go to Linux and relearn everything. What difference does it make?
Well, that's why I don't want to go to 8.1. I've seen it. Don't like it. Don't have a touch screen. I want no part of it.
There you go. So you can easily do whatever you want to do. There are a very few programs, mostly very high-end programs, mostly on specific systems, for specific needs, rather, that only exist in Windows or only exist on the Mac. But for 99.99999% of us, anything you want to do can be done on Linux as well.
Can you give me that website again? I didn't have a pen in my hand when you...
Ubuntu.com, UBUNTU.com.
And you'll want the desktop version.
Right, and they make versions for servers and phones and tablets and everything else. You want the desktop version. And
right.
And the other one is alternative.to. Alternative.to.
Okay, last question. Any problem with different browsers, or doesn't matter?
No. Well, you can't use Internet Explorer, which is a good thing. But I use Chrome. You can use Firefox. You can use Midori. You can use Opera. You can use Epiphany. There's a dozen different desktops. One of the things about Linux is you're spoiled for choice. Generally, if you can do anything at all, you can do it 10 different ways.
Okay.
Right, and, of course, because the way that Linux and many other operating systems work, you can download a dozen different browsers and run any one of them, and they aren't going to interfere with each other, and try them out and pick the one you like best.
Any limitations on, space or memory or anything like that?
Nope.
GPU?
Nope.
In fact, it's generally a lot lower than Windows, so you can put Ubuntu on an older PC, and it will work better than trying to upgrade Windows.
Right. So in any machine these days, you want a minimum of 2 gig.
Right. I got 4. So.
Yeah. No issues there. Linux, I've seen Linux run on systems with 40, 50, 80 gig of memory, of terabytes of memory, doesn't matter. And I've seen it run in much lower than 2 gig, but it as with any operating system, it lags a little when you have too little memory.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you can certainly download and try it. One of the things that many of these systems let you do is download a live CD. So you boot the CD and run Linux from that. You need to be aware, of course, that a CD loads much slower than a hard disk. So loading the operating system, very, very slow. Loading LibreOffice, very, very slow. But once it's in memory, it runs as fast as it would normally, so you get a flavor of the way it would work.
And the one thing that they've done to help alleviate that is now instead of booting from a CD, you boot from a flash drive or USB thumb drive.
Right.
Which is faster than a CD. It's
right.
Not as fast as a hard drive, but it's much faster than a CD.
Right, but as long as you're aware that loading stuff is going to be slower, you're still in good shape.
So that's a way to try it on your existing Windows machine. Get like an 8-gig flash drive, and install Ubuntu on it. Boot that flash drive. See how you like it.
Exactly.
Okay. It looks like Outlook is out, so I have to use a web-based email server.
Or you can use Thunderbird, or you can use
Pine.
use Pine. There's an Enlightenment. No, what's it? It starts with an E, and I suddenly can't think of it. There's an equivalent that's available.
Yeah, there are other mail programs because Microsoft doesn't make Outlook. There are many other mail programs you can use.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
But take your time.
Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Yep, take your time. Check out the Lugor Club, and you should be fine. All right, we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to all of those calls to which we did not get and all of the callers. Call earlier and more often next week. I want to again thank all of you who were so generous to help keep this station on the air and this show on this station. Don't go away because George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael is here to keep him on the straight and narrow, so you don't have to be too very afraid. And we'll be back next week with a whole lot more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.